Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
The stress of caring for COVID-19 patients is taking its toll on healthcare workers. The top ER doctor at a Manhattan hospital recently took her own life. On our newsline, Dr. Ayman Fanous, chairman of the Department of Psychiatry at SUNY Downstate Health Sciences University. Dr. Fanous, we thank you for joining us. Can you put into layman's terms the psychological stress from which healthcare providers are suffering right now?
Absolutely. The healthcare providers are undergoing something that they've never experienced in their entire careers, whether it's medical school, nursing school. I mean, none of us was trained to deal with this kind of particular situation. The stresses are coming from numerous directions. I mean, this is a very unusual type of illness. It's presenting us with challenges that we have to sort of improvise in order to sort of deal with, and sometimes challenges all together combined. And the combination can really sort of synergize and be much more stressful than the sum of its parts, so to speak. So I'll just give you a few examples of how this particular illness is different in terms of its impact emotionally on healthcare providers. Well, first of all, the sheer number of deaths that people are seeing in emergency rooms, on intensive care units, on medical floors, is unlike anything anyone's ever seen. Even people who are dealing with patients who don't have, who are not being treated by them for COVID-19, for example, psychiatric patients. I mean, elderly psychiatric patients are dying too. So we psychiatrists are seeing death rates in our patients that have skyrocketed. I've had faculty members lose up to 9 patients in 1 week just in the field of psychiatry. So that scale of death is unprecedented. The rapidity with which patients deteriorate and die is unprecedented, and the unpredictability of it is also unprecedented. We're seeing patients who do very well for a period of time and then inexplicably deteriorate, and sometimes they are able to be saved and sometimes not. And then there are, of course, the particular emotional sort of consequences of this particular illness. For example, the inability to have patients be with their loved ones in their dying moments has proven to be extremely difficult for our nursing staff and physicians to deal with, especially our nursing staff, who are often the ones who are left to hook the patient up with their family members by telephone, make the phone calls, make the FaceTime calls, and often hold the phone to the patient's ear while their loved ones are speaking to them. The patient might even be unconscious. The inability to have the patient be with their loved ones really sort of goes against everything that these individuals have been trained to do. I mean, they're trained to provide the patient with everything that they need to be comfortable. And certainly, you know, every culture in the world recognizes the importance of having loved ones around you when you die. I mean, every culture views dying alone as something particularly onerous, something that we wouldn't wish on anyone. So that's been very difficult for our nursing staff and physicians to deal with. The other thing is seeing their own co-workers, colleagues, leaders, mentors, et cetera, sometimes get sick and die themselves. And we had a situation at SUNY Downstate where an extremely well-beloved physician mentor who had dealt with numerous crises over the years and shepherded his flock, so to speak, and someone who was really looked up to and revered as a mentor, both intellectually and for his leadership abilities and just his general ability to sort of gather people around him and lead them. He became ill and died, and I had the opportunity to speak with the people who actually treated him. So he was being treated by people that he mentored, that he guided, that he taught. And for those people to see him die in that way was absolutely heart-wrenching. I just was at a meeting of nurses who were taking care of him, and they broke down and sobbed. And it was clear that this was a very devastating experience to them.
Would you liken what these providers are going through to PTSD in a soldier or a cop?
Well, as a matter of fact, I would. What we see in PTSD is, you know, people who are exposed to traumas, either their own trauma or witnessing the trauma of someone else, developing symptoms, you know, weeks, sometimes months later. And these symptoms could include flashbacks, nightmares, general anxiety, feeling sort of distanced from your fellow human being, et cetera. We see that frequently. And so what these individuals are experiencing is in some ways very similar to what people experience in wartime, seeing people die, attempting to save people, and being unable to. And the sheer numbers of it make it much different than any other sort of run-of-the-mill medical experience that they've had before. I mean, losing 3, 4, 5, 6 patients a day, you know, that kind of trauma is unprecedented. And we're not trained or, you know, experienced to deal with it. So we're really having to deal with a brand new kind of situation and sort of work on our feet and improvise for how to deal with it.
You know, doctor, at some point, we don't know when, but at some point the coronavirus pandemic will fade away. But will the trauma from which healthcare workers are suffering stick around for a long time?
You know, I was a full-time VA psychiatrist for about 15 years, and I treated a lot of Vietnam veterans. And we saw with them that, you know, 10, 15, 20 years after the traumas, they were still experiencing nightmares, flashbacks, et cetera. So unfortunately, I do expect some of these symptoms to be ongoing for some individuals for a long time. So we at SUNY Downstate have prepared for this to really sort of galvanize our psychiatric staff to be able to take on patients, people who actually are in our own medical center and perhaps others as well, to work with them on a longer term basis in terms of psychotherapy, maybe even medication management as needed. But in my experience, sometimes PTSD can be prolonged. So we're certainly getting ready to work with that.
For active healthcare providers now, what are some telltale signs that family and coworkers should be watching for to see that they're struggling?
Well, their eating and sleeping habits might be disrupted. Their emotional sort of responsivity might be different. They might be irritable. They might have a look of despondency. There might be tearfulness. There might be sort of decreased sort of affective regulation, as we sometimes say in psychiatry, the ability to sort of control emotional expression. And sometimes a blunted type of emotional expression can be seen as well. We can see loss of interest. We can see the loss of pleasure that people ordinarily would have under certain circumstances, such as being with their children, being with their spouses, enjoying a good meal, so on and so forth. So there's a whole range of things. A feeling of being withdrawn, appearance of being withdrawn and not sort of being engaged in the moment, staring off into space, so on and so forth.
Dr. Fanous, I'll end it with this. What is the answer? What can stressed healthcare workers do? Do they need to literally walk away from jobs they love, but jobs that might be wrecking them?
Well, I have to say there's really no easy answer for this at this point, because, you know, the kind of stresses and forces that they're being confronted with on the job are, again, unprecedented. And sometimes, you know, the absolute volume and sheer numbers of people that they have to treat and see die, for that matter, is, again, unlike anything they've ever seen before. However, there are a number of things that people could do to diminish or blunt some of these stresses to some extent. So, for example, self-care is really very important. Adequate nutrition, good sleeping habits are really important. Very important also is the ability to maintain activities that give a person pleasure, for example, exercise, which over and above pleasure is very important in terms of emotional health, but also other things such as playing an instrument, spending time with family and friends. It could be something as simple as watching reruns of shows that they really enjoyed in the past, listening to stand-up comedy, etc. That's all very important. And probably more important than anything else is the ability to express one's experiences and one's feelings, to describe what someone is going through, to have conversations with people that are close to them, be it colleagues, family, friends, etc. Even though we're unable to spend time with people physically now because of social distancing requirements, people are having Zoom happy hours and things like that, reconnecting with old friends and family that they haven't spoken with. A lot of us have time on our hands Friday and Saturday nights where we would be otherwise going out. We might want to use that time to reconnect with an old family member that they've lost touch with, and maybe even try to repair old friendships that might have been strained in the past, or relationships that might have sort of deteriorated. It'd be a good opportunity to take this time to maybe rejuvenate some of those relationships. So there's a number of things that people can do to, if not take the stresses away, to at least to some extent blunt the effect, the impact on the stress of the stress, and sort of to maintain their, you know, their humanity, etc.
Such an important topic. Dr. Ayman Fanous, Chairman of the Department of Psychiatry at SUNY Downstate, thank you for talking with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.